Namaste. Good morning, everyone. I'd like to start by reading out some words of Siddharameshwar Maharaj. One should always be available at the door of God or the Guru. One should rebuild dilapidated temples and should reconstruct water tanks and should increase the glory of God and the temple. Now you may wonder what he means by this. The meaning of being always at the door of the Guru or God is to be always concentrating on the Atman within. The awareness that I am, the attention to the fact that I am, is the sense of our existence. It is the door of the Guru, the door of God. The inner side is the place of the Guru, the place of God. Therefore, our awareness, our attention is the path of entering into the temple of that God. You see, that is why I am eternally grateful to this lineage of Siddharameshwar Maharaj, Nisargadatta Maharaj, and my own guide, Ramesh Balsekar. Because for me, what Rameshji's teaching did, it made things so simple. It cut out the chatter of the thinking mind. Now, when all that was cleared away, when the path was cleared, when the ego's somersaults, trajectories, antics started dissolving, what was left was the sense of being. Maharaj's, Nisargadatta Maharaj's, I am, abide in your being. So, one teacher's teaching, which was so pragmatic, so practical, it cleared the way, literally cleared the way, that abiding in being was not a task to achieve. It happened automatically. For anyone who finds that their thinking mind has become less rampant, quieter, that person is already having glimpses of abiding in being without realizing it. And therefore, it becomes much easier to focus within. Whereas, what tends to happen is, people tend to try abiding in being, but the clatter of the thinking mind is left unabated. All the judgments, condemnations, projections, hatred, malice, jealousy, envy, etc. keep going on. And then one is trying to abide in one's being as a practice. So for me, this was a very comprehensive delivery of peace of mind. By constant self-awareness, you can go to the state where the Guru exists. The Guru is consciousness. We should rebuild old dilapidated temples. This means the bodies of all people. We have to try by various means to realize and make healthy and strong the bodies of devotees that are harassed and troubled by life. We should reconstruct water tanks. The water tanks of the mind are broken by adverse happenings and repeated shocks. As there's a lot of dirt accumulated in them because of wrong and evil thinking, as well as a lot of weeds and moss are in these tanks. We should remove all of this that has become dirty and clear the tank water. The walls around the mind tank should be strong and built to last. And we should so arrange it that the water of this tank will always be useful to others. And he goes on. And so the endeavor has been, the endeavor, so to speak, is to share with all of you what I tasted, the water that I tasted, drank, which made daily living extremely simple, not easier. We all have to face our challenges and problems. But I found that this thinking mind did not give any more trouble. You see, the tenets of the teaching are so simple. Everything that happens is God's will. Nobody is the doer of their actions. And so on. The highest teachings were simplified for us, for all of us. But how beautifully it works, because in one's life, one may come across a guide, a teacher, a master, a guru. You can call it what you wish. Who lights up our path, shows things to us we did not see before. And as Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi said, the guru acts from outside as well as inside. From outside, he gives you a push. And from inside, he pulls you to the center. Now, what it means, there can be many attributes to this statement, is the guide appears as an external form to someone and says, hey, look here. Just look at life in a slightly different way. So it appears an external form has presented itself and is saying, hey, go back, go within, look within, rethink your worldview, your view about people, yourself, etc., etc. But then what happens? Let's say something appeals that, oh my God, this makes some level of sense. Something appeals to me, even if it doesn't make sense. And then one finds, quite naturally, contemplation. Something happens in one's life during the course of the day, and you think, what if I see it from that prism, which I just heard from this person? What if I view this relationship through that understanding? Now, all that activity is within, so to speak. So the guru gives a push from the outside and a pull from within. Now, that contemplation is an activity in consciousness Inasmuch as the appearance of the guru, so-called appearance of the guru, is an activity in consciousness. But as Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi said, one has to act on the guru's words. Now that happens quite naturally if one has seen how myopic one's vision of life already is, if one has faced enough sufferings, enough setbacks, things going wrong. There's that inner knowing. So this reflection, this contemplation happens quite automatically because something has been touched. And for others, they have still been touched, but they have to expend that effort. They have to act on the words of the guru because the prior conditioning has been so strong. So it varies from case to case. There is no one size fits all kind of approach. And as I was telling someone the other day, there is this expectation that one's problems will reduce when one is on the path. What actually happens is one's attitude to those problems changes. The problems are still there. But they are not magnified as before. We all have to face life's challenges as and when they come. And that is the grace in operation. Everything becomes a learning rather than this poor me syndrome, this happened to me, why did this happen to me? The most beautiful one-line statement from Siddharameshwar Maharaj. How is the ego to be dropped? It is dropped by simply being aware of it. That is what goes on here. This is not about killing the ego. It is not about fighting with the ego. It is not about one should have no ego. These are all mental gymnastics. As my teacher would say, how can you tell the ego to kill the ego? After all, you are talking to the ego. Will the ego kill itself? It is akin to making the thief be in charge of the police station or the arsonist in charge of the fire engines. So the ego, the antics of the ego, are exposed through the light of awareness. That is what this teaching does. As Rameshji would say, if you didn't create the ego but God did, why are you burdening yourself with trying to destroy it? In the game of chess, the queen, the horse, the king, etc. are all made of wood. All are simple wood. Yet even in the game, there is unnecessary argument. The more clever that people are, the more they fight. Similarly, there has been a false appearance of many in the one that is Brahman. This is illusion. This is hypnotism. The illusion is a battle of hide and seek. It is a game. It is a play and a cunning game of emotional imagination. One who knows her will discard her immediately. Rameshji would refer to life as life and the ego, the center, the assumed center of our life and daily living. He would say it was an act of divine hypnosis. hypnotized. We were hypnotized to believe that we are separate from others. And Joel Goldsmith used this example where he said that imagine a hypnotist hypnotizes you and tells you to act like a rabbit jumping all around, and you start doing that. And then he snaps his fingers and you're out of the hypnosis. And then you have no memory of what you were doing when you were hypnotized. Now you are in a different dimension, which is your original state. So the way I view this is that the source, consciousness, introduces an aspect of itself in this living dream of life out of compassion, which is the guru. And the role of the guru, who takes on the form of an object in your life, is to point you back to the source. And so the ego, which thinks that I can get enlightened, I can be awakened, doesn't realize it is still a part of the living dream of life. But when the recognition is there of the guru principle, the principle of consciousness in one's life, what the only thing that is required is surrender. Because when that happens, when the game is given up, so to speak, surrender to consciousness, surrender to the guru is surrender to consciousness, surrender to the source. It is the source which will snap us out of the living dream of life. We cannot do it. The ego, which has assumed the sense of doership all its life, thinks even this can be done. All the chess pieces go into the same box at the end of the game. All the roles we have assigned to people, the labels we have put on them, the judgments we have passed on them, the condemnation we have subjected them to, including ourselves. We are all made of wood. Some questions here. In the Buddha's sword, you gave us two quotations which describe how we can be non-doing, yet fully active in daily life. One, the Bhagavad Gita. Having abandoned attachment to the fruit of action, always content, nowhere seeking refuge, the sage is not doing anything, although doing actions. Two, Ramana Maharshi. Non-action is unceasing activity. The sage is characterized by external and intense activity. So is the apparent inaction of the sage. This must be explained because the people generally mistake stillness to be inertness. It is not so. Can you please say more on this? How we can be non-doing and living in accordance with God's will, even when our jobs demand a lot of thinking? You see, in the first quotation of the Bhagavad Gita, where it is said, the sage is not doing anything, although doing actions. It means the actions are part of the functioning of totality and not done by a me who considers himself or herself to be the doer of the action. And therefore, there is no attachment to the fruits of the actions. I know completely well that the results are not in my control. I do also know that the actions are not truly mine. Why? Because I have been gifted with the body, the senses, with my natural talents and abilities, with my conditioning, and therefore I cannot take ownership of the action. It is as simple as that. And Ramana Maharshi, non-action is unceasing activity. The sage is characterized by external and intense activity, and so is the apparent inaction of the sage. This must be explained because people mistake stillness to be inertness. You see, even when the sage is not doing anything in terms of a physical action, what Bhagwan means by this is that it is a pure throbbing presence, a direct connection to the source, not a tamasic sloth-induced laziness sitting on a chair kind of a situation. It is presence that is available to all, especially to those who come within its ambit. So in that sense, it is alive. It is not covered by layers of thinking and delusions and all that we are normally covered by. And that is why when someone asked Bhagwan, it's easy for you to sit there and not do anything. And he replied saying, that is what you assume. And so the question, how can we be non-doing and living in accordance with God's will? That is already answered, you see, in the question itself. Even when our job demands a lot of thinking, that is the working mind. Of course, we have to use our buddhi, our intellect in situations at work and so on. It doesn't mean even we suspend that activity. What is suspended is the thinking mind of the ego, which is trying to always bring about cause-effect relationships between happenings, jumping into the dead past or an imaginary future, and living in all what if and what should be scenarios, not in what is. Whereas the sage is living what is, not what should be, what should have been, what would be, what could be, what is here and now in this moment. And that is why Ramana Maharshi gave a very simple pointer. He said, next time you are at your desk or you're working, just think the thought, I am not doing this work, but the current is doing it through me. So it kind of smoothens out the edges that I am working hard, I am doing this, I am doing that. You know, it reduces that to dust. Because the fact is, if you were not conscious, you could not work. So who is working? Who is speaking? Who is listening? This is someone who has had a tough time getting a job in these COVID times. There's been the realization that in the country, as far as employers are concerned, after the age of 40, one seems to be finished. More so in difficult times like this one. I moved in at a friend's farm a couple of months back in exchange for helping him with daily activities. It is the only decent option available at this moment, but it is not solving my financial concern or really helping one to get back on one's feet. It would probably be useful to get some professional qualification, but there's not too much clarity about which way to go at this moment. Another solution would be to move to a less stagnant country, yet the global situation we are facing doesn't make it easy anymore. Moreover, in many Western countries, including mine, there's the probability of new restrictions and lockdowns, increased discrimination and animosity against the many who still question the real purpose and usefulness of vaccination. It is already happening and likely to get worse before the winter. All in all, things don't really look bright. How can non-duality help stave off frustration, depression, and return some sanity in such challenging and uncertain times? Non-duality, Advaita, is the biggest support in such times. Because now you have truly seen, we all have, with the collective level of suffering, which has not been faced before on such a scale. And such a visible scale, because earlier with the Spanish flu, etc., we did not have internet, we did not have television. It was not available to us firsthand, you see. So this collective suffering of humanity shows us two things. One, truly, nothing is in one's control. Now we have all seen it. Earlier, oh, it happened to so and so, not to me. Now it's happening to everyone. Nothing is in our control. Nothing can happen unless it is the will of the divine. So what the teachers of Advaita Vedanta have been saying all along is now put to the test. Now the question is, what about the frustration and the depression, etc., etc.? Now, if it is not one's destiny, there is no guarantee that the teaching of Advaita will not make you depressed or remove your frustrations. But what it will certainly do is blunt the impact. Why? Because you will see the hand of God, so to speak, in the situation. You will stop blaming and condemning yourself for your unemployment. You will stop blaming and condemning the world, others. You will stop finding these reasons, you see, to make sense out of the whole picture. You accept that this happened because it was meant to happen. It will not take away the pain. It is a painful situation when one does not have money. Especially if one is living in the world and not in a cave. But that pain in the moment is not loaded with the additional baggage of blame, shame, guilt, hatred, jealousy, envy, and so on. That is what happens with the teaching. So even if depression arises at the situation, one does not dive deep into it like one might have earlier prior to being exposed to the teaching. Even if frustration arises, it is frustration in the moment. Why? Because the acceptance of the will of God becomes easier with the teaching. And perhaps something else might happen. One might look at the brighter side of life, that at least I have a friend who has a farm and I can go and stay there and work on his farm and help him in exchange for my food. There are so many who don't even have that opportunity. And one realizes how much little one needs actually to get by. So be it. There is always someone worse than you, doing worse than you. Not someone, many, many hundreds of thousands of people. Imagine if you didn't have that friend. At least God gave you that friend and gave that friend of yours that farm. Certainly it is painful that the job is not coming along. In any country over 40, it's perhaps not that easy to get a job. Unless one is in a profession like law and being a doctor, etc., etc., it is difficult. That is the reality. And that has been inflamed during the pandemic because there have been layoffs. People have been asked to go. In our own city, shops are only allowed to function during the working day till 4 p.m., not on weekends. Same with restaurants. So many small shop owners have left and gone back to their villages. They cannot sustain. So it does help in this way. It is our attitude to what has happened that undergoes a sea change. A transformation, and compassion arises as a result of this. When you hear of someone else losing their job, someone else in the same boat, so to speak. Rameshji in his talks insisted on only one spiritual practice, that is, questioning if the actions performed by me, the ego, are mine, which I believe forms the basis of Ramana Maharshi's self-inquiry. But isn't the ego's self-inquiry or surrender, as Rameshji pointed out, a doership? When the ego thinks, is this my action, and comes to the conclusion that none of its actions are its own, isn't the act of thinking and coming to a conclusion doing of the ego? Most certainly it is. We are in the realm of duality. The ego is shown things to do. On the yogic path, the ego will be shown yogic practices and kriyas. On the jnana yoga path, Ramana Maharshi will speak about self-inquiry. For the ego to look and ask and question till the point that is not required anymore. So for example, as Rameshji would say, sit back comfortably at the end of the day with your cup of coffee or tea or whatever, and just think, whatever happened in the day, anything that happened, was any action truly my action? Or did that action depend on something I saw, heard, tasted, smelled, or touched? Let's say I was crossing the road and I saw an old lady who was trying desperately to cross it, but there was too much traffic. So I went and helped her cross the road. If I had not seen that old lady, my action would not have happened. So is it truly my action? Now, when Rameshji says, sit back at the end of the day, think about it, that is a doing, most certainly. But the minute you realize, let's say you sit for 2 or 3 days and you say, my God, that is quite true. No action is truly mine in that sense. It depended on something happening prior to that action. Then you don't need to sit and do this every evening anymore. So then that part is done, finished. Till that point, it is needed. That is how it works. But it is not a practice, Jnana Yoga, by any teacher, anyone who is on the path of knowledge, inquiry, etc. It is not a physical practice in that sense, like let's say Hatha Yoga, Kriya Yoga, whatever. It is more an internal practice, so to speak. That is the difference. If anyone would like to ask questions or even share their experience with this teaching, how it has impacted their daily living, their relationships, have they noticed any change in themselves? And even better, if people have told them they have changed, then you're more than welcome to share this for all of us to listen to. I'm just going to try closing one light because it's hurting my eye a bit. That's better. Yes, Shiva.
Hi, sir. Good morning. I'm Dr. Shiva. I'm from Chennai, sir. So, thank you very much for your guidance.
And, I'd love to have a doctor called Shiva.
I've been following Shirdi Sai Baba. So, I have a certain question to you, sir. And if you may allow me, I would like to ask you a question. So the thing is, like, I know that he's been my guru all these years, and when I've been in meditation, especially during this COVID, there were a few subtle changes that happened to my life. In 2019, Baba took me to Chardham Yatra, and it happened like out of nowhere. And he was there during my dip in Gangotri, and there are a lot of changes that happened on that yatra. And when I came back, during this COVID times, my lifestyle changed. I got a lot into meditation. During that time, I started receiving some mantras from nowhere. It itself came, and I don't know Sanskrit, but I started receiving some mantras. Now, in Satcharita, it says that Baba does not initiate anyone on mantra. So, but then I don't know where these mantras come from. So am I to follow my guru who has said that I don't initiate anyone on mantra, or should I recite that mantra?
Is that the question?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. You see, Shiva, everything is said in context. Now, in the Satcharita, Baba was speaking to someone and those words were recorded. So I don't initiate with mantras. He was telling somebody or his audience. But he did not say not to recite mantras if they come up spontaneously. He said, I don't initiate with mantras. But if Baba is your guru, and if these happenings have happened unasked, naturally, spontaneously, then it is meant to be followed, and you will recite them till you are meant to. Even at some point, that will drop away, you see. That is the beauty of this. Because you didn't start the process, there was no sense of doership, you didn't even have a wish to recite a mantra. The mantras emerged. You didn't even know Sanskrit. So, you see, at every point in time, sometimes we find is help is given along the way, or assistance on our journey. You have made progress in many ways during COVID, as you say, lifestyle has changed, meditation. So these are all tools which come to assist us. And because we have not so-called done it, we have not said, oh, I must chant a mantra. So the me has not been brought into the picture. Rather, the hearing of the mantra is a divine happening, totally beyond your control. Then that needs to be honored, and that will play its role till it's meant to. You will ride in that bus of that mantra, and then you'll be dropped off at a bus stop to carry onwards on the next journey. You see, so we should not be so dogmatic that, you know, Baba said this, didn't say this. You have to see where was your will in the happening. And if you realize your will was completely non-existent and something came, something descended, something came up, then that has to be honored. That is my view, but you have to take your own decision.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Okay. I hope that was clear. As my teacher would say, you may not agree with me, but at least you'll know that I was clear.
No, absolutely. I'm thank you very much for your guidance.
Okay, thank you, Shiva. Yes, Abhishek.
Good morning, Gautam sir.
Good morning.
My gratitude to you, and on yesterday was Guru Purnima also. So, thank you so much for your teachings.
Thank you. Is the volume less or is it?
Is it fine now?
It's better now. Yes.
Okay. So just want to share one thing, that how this teaching helps us understand things. So I have a daughter, 3-year-old daughter. So when I look at her, she has a habit of humming songs. So she hums like whenever she's sitting with me, whenever she was moving around. She's a very chirpy child. So if I had not come across this understanding, I would have thought that why she keeps on humming this and she doesn't keep quiet. But I now know that from the very first day when she was born, I took her in my lap, and because I also have a habit of humming. So I used to hum from the very first day because she didn't used to sleep, and I used to take her in my lap and used to sing songs. And because it was my habit, so accordingly, due to that conditioning, she was born in our family, and due to my habit, she got that habit. So with Ramesh sir teaching, it was so obvious that nothing was in anyone's control. So if she grows up and she says that, or if someone else says that, why don't you keep quiet? Why do you keep humming? And but I now deep down know it is not because she does anything. It happened because I have the habit of humming. And from the very first day, she received that conditioning from me. So thank you so much.
I'll tell you something quite funny, very similar to what you said. I was seeing a video on YouTube of Rameshji's German seminars. If anyone is interested, these are from 1996. These videos have come up on YouTube.
I've seen certain, yes.
It's called Advaita House. Someone has set it up. So I saw something beautiful where Rameshji is telling his audience that his granddaughter was a very restless child, extremely restless. And so the mother was quite fed up. And so the mother told the granddaughter, look, I suggest you pray to God to make you less restless, because I can't deal with it anymore. And this daughter, the young girl, maybe 4 years of age or five, I don't know, in all earnestness tells the mother, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And I will definitely pray. I'll definitely pray to God and ask him to make me less restless. And then after a day, she's back to being restless, and you know, the mother's getting frustrated. And the mother asks the daughter, didn't you pray to God to make you less restless? And she said, Mummy, I did. But either God can't do anything about it, or he likes me just the way I am.
Yes. That's so true.
As the innate wisdom of the child, you see.
So that's what, whatever I shared might sound very simple, but if I have started looking through this prism, then certainly anyone who does anything is because of their conditioning or their genetics. maybe somebody is not singing, somebody is shouting.
You know, I'll tell you something else, Abhishek. I was in the advertising days, I was in the advertising business. I had a German client and they were in Bombay and we took them to a shop to shop for souvenirs to take back home. She had two daughters. So they were running all over the gift shop. Now, one daughter, the elder one, knew exactly what gift to buy for which friend. So she was very prompt, you know, like went here, there. The other daughter was lost. The other daughter could not make up her mind. Should I take this for this friend? Should I take that? And this poor girl was getting a bit restless and agitated because the mother was saying, hurry up, you know, and I was observing this whole thing. And then I told the mother, I said, see, she's not doing it purposely. She's made that way. She's been made to be indecisive. She's not trying to frustrate you. The poor thing at that young age just can't figure out, you know. So as you said, when we see that everyone, including those who we find abusive or aggressive or whatever, is just playing out their script, it is not directed at me. They are who they are. Then that kind of view of people really changes the dynamics beautifully.
Exactly. And there is no need to justify anyone because there's no one to justify. And if you abide with this teaching, abide in yourself with this teaching, then you rightly mentioned that the life will not become easy. It will become simpler. That's so true.
Simpler, because, and also you stop trying to correct people and telling exactly. them to be other than who they are and how they are. You see, we have this compulsive habit of trying to tell people how to behave and how they should be. That drops away.
Because Gautam sir, for them, it must be us that not behaving properly, right?
So exactly.
Yeah. So it all depends upon does not depend upon what the situation is, but how your mind is conditioned for the situation. Otherwise, everyone would have behaved same in every situation, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
So, and you very rightly mentioned that, you know, when I started listening to Ramesh Balsekar sir's videos, they were so simple that we tend to ignore them.
And that's what happens. I thought
that, what is this? This is so simple and it cannot be this way. But when you go deep down into it, and that is the reality, that simplicity is the reality.
You see, that is the whole point. He would say beauty in simplicity. Beauty in simplicity. And then that this teaching is so simple, that's why you don't get it. Everyone wants complications, you see.
Exactly.
That's the whole point. As I was in touch with one direct marketing agency and they were drafting one line for the website, which we had to ensure everyone would understand. And, you know, it was a tricky line, like the minimum order value is so and so. And some people were not understanding. So they were simplifying. So the digital marketing agency head called me and he used this term, which I loved. He said, you know, sir, we have to make this line stupid proof so that everyone can understand it. And that is what this teaching is, you know. It is so simple, so simple. It is deceptively simple because we are looking for something more enticing, something which, you know, like, wow, it has the wow factor. And then we have something as simple as, you know, it is all God's will. You are not the doer of your actions. Let life flow. And you really wonder, is it worth spending so much time with this teaching?
Somehow earlier, I used to think, like before this teaching also, I had this feeling that everything happens for some purpose. But now I could relate to it. Maybe the dots is getting connected. I don't know. Because when I got introduced to this teaching by itself, so then it also says that everything happens as per the cosmic law, right?
Yes.
So that's beautiful, Gautam. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Abhishek. Thank you for sharing. Yes, Ram Kumar.
Namaste. Today, your satsang was really good. I seeing a change in your background, just a lot of class, a lot of decoration, and that Nataraja has also like been placed somewhere else, I guess. So that guru feet and that somebody touching and all that is like so good. That flower on Ganesha, that lot of yellow flowers. The decoration is really good for Guru Purnima, which you have done.
I haven't done it. That was for my mother's online Guru Purnima program. One of her students, who's very good at these decorations, did it up, and it's been left that way for a couple of days.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But it is beautiful. You see, especially that image of the feet of the guru and the disciple bowing down to it. You know, I don't know if you can see the painting and the explosion of light which happens between the two. Because that is something that my mother actually saw in her meditation, that vision of what actually, you know, it appears to us as one individual is bowing down in front of another. And many people also find that offensive because they think in those terms that one individual is bowing down to another. Oh, we should not do that. We should not give our power to the other and so on and so forth. But various things happen in that aspect. As Osho rightly said, true surrender is when you bow down in front of someone else and you know there's something higher than your own mind intellect. And the other is that the feet of the guru, the feet of the master, are actually the point for the maximum transmission of energy. And so that is why traditionally that ritual was there to bow down at the feet. So much more happens than what we see physically, you see. That is the whole point. That gets missed by us. Okay?
I wanted to share one thing also. There are two direct disciples of Nisargadatta Maharaj, Avadhutanand Maharaj and Ramakant Maharaj. Ramakant Maharaj used to live at the Ranjit Ashram in Nashik. And Avadhutanand Maharaj is in the Nisargadatta Maharaj at Vangaon, outskirts of Mumbai. So both of them have like been passing mantra to the lineage mantra. Two very keen ones who are very like, very willing to chant the mantra with discipline but Ramakant Maharaj passed away in August 2018. So this info is just like anyone who is like very keen to take up the mantra, to bring that understanding from just intellectual level to deep core, to realize and discriminate this is real, that is unreal, and like recognize illusion and ease up. So who are very keen and willing to chant mantra, they may obtain from Ramakant Maharaj disciple, foreign disciple called Ann Shaw. They can get in touch with her through email, and then she'll like gradually understand and like see. She gives online, it seems, in this COVID times. Another option is directly to go to Vangaon to Avadhutanand Maharaj and get that mantra. So this is just info I thought I could share to those who may be really needing.
I didn't meet Ramakant Maharaj, but I had the opportunity 2 weeks ago. I went to Siddharameshwar Maharaj's Samadhi at Banganga, and his wife happened to be there.
Oh.
So that was just sheer coincidence. That was very nice. And, you know, Ramkumar, even this teaching is full of mantras. Nobody is the doer of their actions is a mantra. Everything is God's will is a mantra. You see. And this, if this is chanted all the time, then it changes one's life. So, after all, the word mantra means freeing the mind. Freeing the thinking mind of the ego that is stuck in this illusion of doership. Okay? Thank you. Yes, Jayant.
Gautam. Am I audible?
Yes, you are. Good to see you, Jayant.
First, I express my gratitude to Sangeeta, Divya and the team. One of the good outcome of this pandemic is your weekly meetings with you, which I could not have imagined, you know. So I thank them, both of them and rest of the team, for making this. And it's wonderful. They are precisely on time, ending in time. So first, I express my gratitude towards them.
That's so beautiful. Thank you. And actually, it's even harder for them because I think I am tech dumb. So they have to work even harder as far as I'm concerned.
That is what I understood. And of course, again, deep gratitude to you for continuing this beautiful lineage of Rameshji. And see, all this, I was fortunate 15 years ago to meet him. And since then, last 15 years, I'm experiencing the lovely fruits of this teaching. This teaching, really, I have to tell you, express myself, I have tested with every significant happening in my life, and it has come out true. And really, as again this Abhishek was saying, it does nothing. It only makes your life simpler. And that is what I have experienced all this time. And see, these weekly things are really, I look upon, I get drawn to it. I've not never missed, maybe one or two I must have missed. It's great to be in your company. I resonate with every word of yours.
Thank you, Jayant. That's very sweet of you. Thank you. Even I didn't anticipate these weekly online talks, because we used to meet once a month at my residence before the pandemic. And so it has migrated to this structure. Although those who used to come home for satsang often send me complaint emails saying that we are waiting for the physical ones whenever that happens. So thank you.
Pranam to this body mind organism called Gautam Sachdev.
Thank you, Jayan. Yes, Shiva, you want to ask something more?
Yeah, sure. I missed out on a question.
Sure.
So you've always insisted, and you've on your talks, you've always concentrated more on relationships and harmony, between the people that you live with. So I think that gives a sense of peace and contentment in life. But it's mostly like, we're also ignorant in life in many ways. So if we are blessed to come out of that ignorance, sometimes it's very difficult to face people who are more ignorant in life. It's very difficult to be in harmony with them. Sometimes people take your goodness as a weakness and they start taking advantage. So how do you face such, such scenarios when you meet people, they are taking advantage on you just because you're being good? So either we be like that, or we be like Lord Krishna. So what are we supposed to do in such, stages of life?
You see, Shiva, this teaching does not mean that you allow people to walk all over you. At the same time, while you have to do precisely that which you think and you feel you should do, even if you have to tell off somebody or put your point clearly across, if someone is not behaving in an appropriate way, for example, what happens is your words are no longer directed at an individual doing something whom you have accused of doing that thing. You have seen through this that this person is acting out their script. So, your words, your reactions will not carry that sting which they used to carry earlier, targeted at individuals. So there is a difference, because even if you have to put your point across, you will not be rude to an individual, so to speak. You will be firm. You will know that this person is equally a representation of the divine as you are. But you are made a certain way. You have certain characteristics. You don't resonate what the person in front of you is doing or saying, and by all means you will say, hey, look, this is the way I feel, and let's agree to disagree or whatever. So your approach changes. It does not mean, oh, we accept that everything is God's will and therefore, you know, we sit quietly and do nothing about it and get walked all over. No. But we find that when our relationships come to us from this dimension of understanding, we are able to deal with them better without being antagonistic, without finger pointing, without needling someone, you know, and accusing them. All that drops away. That's what happens.
Okay, sir. So thank you very much, because for the last two times I wanted to connect, but someone wasn't able to. So thank you and your team for this wonderful initiative and guidance to people like us. So thank you so much.
Thank you. What kind of doctor are you?
I'm a diabetologist, sir.
Okay, okay. That's a big thing, big problem in India, isn't it?
Yeah, the rising prevalence is so much, both in urban and rural areas.
Yes.
Every day we see so much complications because of diabetes.
Right.
And my guru has rightly guided me towards this. There's so much to speak. I don't want to waste your time right now.
Yes, we can keep it for another satsang if you so wish to come on again.
Yes, I would love to, sir.
Okay, okay.
Thank you and your team, sir. Thank you.
Okay, I think we can end the questions here, and I'm just going to change the screen so I can see all of you. God bless everyone.